So this is Goloka Vrindavan. What you see behind me is Goloka Vrindavan, the Yamuna River, where Krishna and the gopis would play. But right now it's not nighttime, so they're somewhere else. They're probably at Radhakund right now. And they'll come to the banks of this river, the Yamuna River, tonight. But that's not for any of you conditioned souls to see. That's only for advanced devotees. Anyway, all right. So now we will chant Jai Radha Madhava by the Yamuna. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Gopi Janaballabha Giri Gopi Janaballabha Giri Vardhadhauti Yashodanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashodanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamunatira Balachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Bharad Haluti Gopi Jana Balabha Giri Vardhadhauti Yashodanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamunatira Manachari Yamunatira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paramahansa also Satishi Shimad. His Divine Grace Abhaya Channana Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrindi Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Friends, say Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidwaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Gijai Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopikopinath Shyam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhana Gijai Vrindavanam Gijai Mathuram Gijai Jagannathaswami Gijai Manamai Gijai Srimati Lasi Devi Gijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Gijai Gaur Primananda Hari Hari Gaur. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees. All glories, the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarani. So, Om Gana Timuranda Shah. Whoops. What happened here? Oh. Okay, it's only my screen went out. Okay. Om Gana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurin Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So now we'll go on to the nectar devotion. And usually when we start reading from the nectar devotion, we chant this one prayer to the six Goswamis in Vrindavan, which we put on the slideshow yesterday. Nana Shastra Vichara Naiki Nibano Sad Dharma Samstavako Lokanam Hipakarano Tri Bhuvane Manyo Shadanya Koro Radha Krishna Badara Vinda Bhajana Nandena Matali Ko Bandhu Rupa Sanatano Raghu Yugo Shri Jiva Gopalako. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of, because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Okay, and now we're starting the Nectar of Devotion. First class in Nectar of Devotion. Here we go. And the first portion of Nectar of Devotion is described as the characteristics of pure devotional service. So this is what you have to look forward to. Some things, actually, you should already have, and some things you have to look forward to. Okay, and here we go. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, 29th chapter. I wonder if this is big enough for all of you to read. Let me just see. I think I should make it bigger so everybody could read, especially those who are looking at their phones. So that's better. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the third canto, 29th chapter, verses 12 and 13, Kapila Deva instructed his mother is given the following characteristics of pure devotional service. Now, just one point about nectar devotion is Rupa Goswami is presenting what he learned from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but while he's presenting what he learned from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about his guidebook in devotional service, he gives quotes to substantiate the message that he got from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is all like a law book in which previous laws or previous statements substantiate the statements made by the lawyer. So here, my dear mother, those who are my pure devotees and who have no desire for material benefit or philosophical speculation have their minds so much engaged in my service that they are never interested in asking me for anything except to be engaged in that service. They do not even beg to live my abode with me. So we're going to go over the types of liberation, which we've mentioned before. There are five kinds of liberation. So here are the five. Namely, to become one with the Lord. That's a horrible one. We don't accept that. You don't actually become one with the Lord, but you become an illusion thinking you become one with the Lord because you merge into the Lord's Brahma Jyoti. You never become one with the Lord. You become one in purpose with the Lord, but you don't become one with the Lord. That becoming so-called one with the Lord, it's called Kaivalya, which means oneness. Natakayate is the statement by Prabhupada Saraswati, who says, that is the desire for hell. Because when you actually merge in the Brahma Jyoti, you don't actually merge. But when you think you're merging in the Brahma Jyoti, you're floating around the Brahma Jyoti, there's no activities, it's hell. Because you have no feelings, no activities, no manifestation of your individuality, even though you're still an individual. So, namely, to become one with the Lord, that's number one. Two, to live with the Supreme Lord on the same planet, that's kind of nice. Three, to have the same features as the Lord. In the Vaikuntha planets, they generally do have those same features. Four, to enjoy the same opulences as the Lord. It's okay. And five, to live as a companion of the Lord. That's pretty nice. Anyway, I guess you can tell which ones I'm attracted to. A devotee, what to speak of rejecting material sense gratification, does not even want any of the five kinds of liberation. He is satisfied simply by discharging loving service to the Lord. That is the characteristic of pure devotion. However, I can add a little bit to this. A devotee will not accept the first type of liberation, which is the merging or the entering into the Brahma Jyoti. He will not accept that. The other types, he will accept if Krishna wants. Otherwise, You will stay in the material world and serve Krishna if that is what Krishna wants. The whole point is, what does Krishna want? That's pure devotional service. And whatever Krishna wants, I want. That's pure devotional service. I'm not saying I'm at that level. I'm just saying that's the attitude of a pure devotee. My want is identical with Krishna's want. In the above statement by Kapila Deva from Srimad Bhagavatam, the actual position of a pure devotee is described, and the primary characteristics of devotional service are also defined. Further characteristics of devotional service are described by Srila Rupa Goswami with evidences from different scriptures. He states that there are six characteristics of pure devotional service, which are as follows. One, remember these. You will all get tested on them. Pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. Because you know, even if you're experiencing distress, it's temporary. And actually, we're going to explain what that means a little later, or actually probably will explain. Two, pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness, because anything before that was inauspicious. Three, pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. Four, pure devotional service is rarely achieved. Five, those in pure devotional service deride even the conception of liberation, which I just mentioned before, in regard to the impersonal liberation. That was the first of the liberations that or Prabhupada listed, or Rupa Goswami listed. Six, pure devotional service is the only means to attract Krishna. Actually means the only means to control Krishna. And it says, Krishna is all attractive, but pure devotional service attracts even him. This means the pure devotional service is even transcendentally stronger than Krishna himself because it is Krishna's internal potency. So we know that Krishna's internal potency is headed up by Srimati Radharani. And one of her transcendental qualities is that she always keeps Krishna under her control. And the way she keeps Krishna under her control is by her love. Not by her strength, but by her love. And that's the way that pure devotees can control Krishna. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, Kuntiya, prati janihima name bhakta pranashati. He says to Arjuna, you should declare it that my devotee never perishes. Now, the interesting thing is, why is Krishna asking Arjuna to declare it when Krishna can declare something by himself? He doesn't need Arjuna to declare it. Why? Because people would trust Arjuna more than they would trust Krishna. Now, that's interesting. Why? Because Krishna will follow the direction and the promise of his pure devotee. Whereas Krishna may break his own promise. Like in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, we find that Krishna promised not to fight and actually to save the life of Arjuna. He fought. He raised the chariot wheel and rushed at grandfather Bhishma. So when Krishna's devotee makes a promise, Krishna is duty-bound or love-bound to fulfill that particular promise. So Prabhupada has given us a promise. What is that promise? That if you simply continue with devotional service throughout this lifetime, then somehow or other, at the end of this lifetime, you will go back to Godhead. Pretty good. All you got to do is continue sincerely, not committing offenses, do the best you can, and Prabhupada will arrange. Krishna may say that, I don't want that creep back to Godhead. And Prabhupada will say, but I promised, please accept him. And Krishna said, all right, I got to accept him because you said so. Anyway, so it's good having an ironclad guarantee. It's nice that when you buy something, it's good to have a guarantee. So when you enter Krishna consciousness, it's good to have that guarantee. And that gives us to the, brings us to the point of, let's say, Ashabandha. Which means even though we may not have this supreme attraction for the process of hearing and chanting or devotional service in general, still we understand that hope against hope that Prabhupada will save us. Mm. Just like we told that story many, many, I think a month or two ago, about that devotee Pigpen. It was called Pigpen, not Pigpen anymore. But he was just like lying on the street as a bum, and somehow or other he took shelter of Prabhupada and became a great devotee and surrendered. Wow. From the lowest position to the highest position. So here, now, Rupa Goswami, through the agency of Srila Prabhupada, is actually going to tell us about each of those different qualities of pure devotional service that were listed separately, you know, the six qualities, beginning what? With relief from material distress. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that one should surrender unto him. That's where we left in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, 18th chapter, giving up all their engagements. The Lord also gives his word there that he will protect the surrendered souls from the reactions of sinful activities. Srila Rupa Goswami says that the distresses from sinful activities are due both to the sins themselves and sins committed in our past lives. Wow. Sins themselves cause distress, obviously, you know, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling. And the reaction to sins that we committed in the past are causing us distress. So it's not even when you're doing the sins that they give you happiness. The sins give you distress. Generally, one commits sinful reactions due to ignorance. But ignorance is no excuse for evading the reaction to sinful activities. Now that's interesting. One can say, they're ignorant. Yeah, I didn't know any better. Well, guess what? There's several examples I can give in this regard. One is, you can say, I don't know that fire burns, and then you get burned by fire. It has nothing to do with knowledge. Like a little baby doesn't know the fire burns, and he can actually get burned by fire. That's one point. Second point is, the reason we are in ignorance is because of our sin. So we're responsible for the ignorance that overcame us so that we did sinful reactions. It's like a circle, a vicious circle, which we're going to describe in a second. Sinful activities are two kinds, those which are mature and those which are not mature. That doesn't mean little baby sins and grown-up sins. For example, mature, a technical Sanskrit name for mature sinful reactions is aparabdha karma. And not mature is aparabdha. So the sinful, Prabhupada explains it, the sinful activities for which we are suffering at the present moment are called mature. In other words, they came to fruition, they sprouted. Oh my God. The many sinful activities stored within us for which we have not yet suffered are considered immature. And we don't know what is coming. Of course, this is not in reference to a devotee. Have to give that caveat. For example, a man may have committed criminal acts but has not yet been arrested for them. That's not quite mature yet. Immature. Now, as soon as he is detected, arrest is awaiting him. Similarly, for some of our sinful activities, we're awaiting distresses in the future, and for others which are mature, we are suffering at the present moment. However, it's not a question of someone detecting our past sinful activities, because Krishna is aware of everything, and his agents are made aware, such as Yamaraj, who arranges for the reactions, and the other demigods. They're aware of everything we do. You cannot escape from the gaze of Krishna and his representatives. There's no way. Just like many people now, they're really paranoid about Facebook, or paranoid even about having a camera on their computer or a USB camera. USB camera is a camera you attach to the computer. So what they do is at night, they make sure that the camera is covered so no one can watch what they're doing. People get really paranoid like that. They're so insecure. Even we had one devotee who was so insecure he wouldn't take his cat to the vet. Because he understood, or thought, the vet, that means veterinarian, was going to put a chip in his cat so the cat would be able to spy on him and all the devotees. Oh my God. That's Cyber Cat. Anyway, so the point is that actually we are being watched at every moment, and I'm not talking about the government at this point. The government's not really interested in what some Hare Krishna devotee is doing at this particular point. And if they are interested in what I'm doing, they just need to go on my Facebook page. Because a lot of the day, including when I do the deity worship in the morning, I'm on Facebook, so I don't have any secrets. Actually, it would be great if I was watched 24 hours a day. Wow, the person who was watching me would actually make great spiritual progress, because they'd hear Prabhupada speaking, they'd see me cook for the deities, they'd see me eat prasadam. I don't know how interesting that is. They'd see me try to help some suffering devotees. I mean, it was interesting. Yeah, let them watch me. I got nothing to hide. They see me swimming. So anyway, so in any case, Krishna's agents see us 24 hours a day, and so it's not a question of them just finally doing some detective work and finding out what we did. They know already, but they're just waiting for the appropriate time, and Krishna's waiting for the appropriate time to give us a particular reaction. And there's good reactions, too. Good reactions, bad reactions. Good reactions means you win the lottery. Bad reaction means you lose the lottery. No, you lose your money. Just like you see sometimes someone is really doing well in this world, you know, has a lot of good karma. And then all of a sudden the good karma runs out and boom. That person who apparently was a billionaire owes so much money to the government that he may go into jail. He's riding high, has his own airplanes, is the head of a particular country, and boom. Karma's up, buddy. Good karma's up. Time for the bad stuff. So anyway, we don't know what's coming. But for a devotee, what's coming is just Krishna. We don't have to worry about that. But just stick to Krishna consciousness, because if you don't, stick to Krishna consciousness, guess what? That karma comes back. So, Prabhupada said, in this way, there's a chain of sinful activities, and they're concomitant distresses, and the conditioned soul is suffering life after life due to these sins. He is suffering in the present life, the results of sinful activities from the past life, and is he meanwhile creating further sufferings for his future life. Mature sinful activities are exhibited as one is suffering from some chronic disease. If one is suffering from legal implication, if one is born in a low and degraded family, or if one is uneducated or very ugly, of course we don't judge a person by how they look, but being not so pretty or not so handsome may interfere with someone's sense gratification. So these are indications of past sinful activities, or they may be indications that Krishna has put you into a particular situation to help you surrender to him. Because if you are very rich, if you are very intelligent, if you come from a very high-class family, King of England or, you know, Prince whatever, Prince Charming, whatever, and you're healthy, you tend to get very proud. So sometimes Krishna does these things, and it's not karma. Krishna sometimes, yashyaham anagrinami harishe tadadamshanai. Sometimes Krishna takes things away so that your false pride, he pulls the rug out from under you so the false pride is gone. You may think you're a great devotee, and then Krishna shows you, no, you ain't a great devotee. And then what do? You take shelter of his holy names. People may reject you. And now what do? Take shelter of Krishna's holy names. There are many results of past, so not in every case that if you have legal implications, born in a low family, and you're ugly, uneducated, that it's karma. If you're a devotee, it's Krishna. And his purpose is to bring you closer to him. There are many results of past sinful activities for which we are suffering at the present moment. Then we may be suffering in the future due to our present sinful activities. But all these reactions to sinful deeds can be immediately stopped if we take to Krishna consciousness. What a relief. As evidence for this, Rupa Goswami quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 14th chapter, verse 19. This verse is in connection with Lord Krishna's instruction to Uddhava, where he says, "My dear Uddhava, devotional service unto me is just like blazing fire, which can burn into ashes unlimited fuel supply to it. The purport is that as a blazing fire can burn any amount of fuel to ashes, so devotional service to the Lord in Krishna consciousness can burn up the fuel of sinful activities." For example, in the Gita, Arjuna thought that fighting was a sinful activity, but Krishna engaged him in the battlefield under his order, so the fighting became devotional service. Therefore, Arjuna was not subjected to any sinful reaction. In fact, even chanting the holy name accidentally or jokingly, which is called namabhas, a reflection of the chanting, can free you from all sins. But don't take advantage of it. Don't just like go Hare Krishna and take your Seagram's or Manischewitz wine. See, Rupa Goswami quotes from another verse in the third canto. See how he's giving evidence about these things? Just to prove his point, 33rd chapter, verse 6, in which Devahuti addresses their son, Kapila even says, "My dear Lord, there are 9 different kinds of devotional service, beginning from hearing and chanting. Anyone who hears about your pastimes, who chants about your glories, who offers you obeisances, who thinks of you, and in this way executes any of the 9 kinds of devotional service, even if he is born in a family of dog eaters, the lowest grade of mankind, becomes immediately qualified to perform sacrifices." Wow. Ho bhakta swa bhajito gariyam. Yadi vagre vartate namatubhyam. Tapustapush juhu vashashna arya. Ramanuchir nama granati yate. How wonderful it is, even if one isn't born in the family of dog eaters, if he's chanting the holy names, it's understood that he's actually undergone all the preliminary practices and austerities, and come to the platform of being a Brahmin. As such, how is it possible that anyone actually engaged in devotional service of full Krishna consciousness does not become purified? It is not possible. One who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and devotional service has without doubt become freed from all contaminations of material activities. Why does Prabhupada use the "and" here? Because one could say, "Oh, I'm thinking of Krishna, but you got to do something practical." That's pure devotional service, as described by Rupa Goswami, is doing what Krishna wants you to do actively, as that word active, and doing it joyfully, lovingly, to please Krishna. Devotional service, therefore, has the power to actually nullify all kinds of reactions to sinful deeds. A devotee is nevertheless always alert not to commit any sinful activities. This is his specific qualification as a devotee. The Srimad Bhagavatam states that by performing devotional service, a person who was even born in a family of dog eaters may become eligible to take part in the performance of the ritualistic ceremonies recommended in the Vedas. That's the verse I just quoted before. It is implicit in this statement that a person born into a family of dog eaters is generally not fit for performing yajna or sacrifice. The priestly caste in charge of performing these ritualistic ceremonies recommended in the Vedas is called the Brahmin order. Unless one is a Brahmin, he cannot perform these ceremonies. So, a person born in a Brahmin family or in a family of dog eaters is due to his past activities, is born. If a person is born in a family of dog eaters, it means that his past activities are all sinful. But even such a person takes to the path of devotional service, begins to chant the holy names of the Lord, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare. He is at once fit to perform the ritualistic ceremonies. This means that his sinful reactions have immediately become neutralized. And sometimes a person is born in a Brahmin family, and he's very sinful, so he doesn't actually show the qualities of a Brahmin. And sometimes someone is born in a dog-eater family, and he is actually very pious because he shows devotional qualities. Like Haridas Thakur, not dog eater, but you know, he's born in actually an Islamic family, meat eating family. And he was this great saint. So we see a Brahmin not according to birth, but according to qualities. And sometimes we find people born even in Krishna's family that become demons. We told that story before how this Boma, who is the son of Krishna and the earth planet, became a great demon and started kidnapping ladies and torturing people. Krishna himself had to kill him. It stated in the Padma Purana that there are four kinds of effects due to sinful activities, which are listed as follows. And I'll explain them. The effect which is not yet fructified, that's called aparabdha karma. Two, the effect which is lying as seed, that's called bija. The effect is which is already mature, that's parabdha karma. And the effect which is almost mature, that's like a type of aparabdha karma, not quite manifest. So it is also stated that all these four effects become immediately vanquished for all those who surrender unto the Supreme Personality Godhead Vishnu and become engaged in devotional service and full Krishna consciousness. Let me be more specific about the four. There's actually Kuta, Bija, Aparabdha, Parabdha, and then you get another Kuta, Bija. So what do I mean by that? I wish I could show you the chart. I had made the chart up about this, but you know, I don't have it right now in front of me. So Kuta is the inclination to do something sinful. Bija is the seed of a particular sinful activity. And then there's the karma, the activity itself. Sorry about that. And then after that, you get the aparabdha karma, the effect which is not quite fructified or not quite mature. And then you have the parabdha karma, which is the mature effect. Okay, so let me explain this cycle. Okay. So you start with a kuta, an inclination towards sin. Then the bija, the seed of a particular sin in which you water a different way. And then you do the sin. After you're contemplating, you know, remember we talked about in the Bhagavad Gita, Jayate Vishak Pumsam, Sangastasha Vijayate, Sangatsan Jayate Kama Kama Krodha Vijayate. When you contemplate something, you have the inclination, you have the seed, you do it, then you have the effect, which has not yet come out, and then you have the effect that comes out, that's parabdha karma. And then after that, because of all this sinful cycle, stimulates another kuta and a bija, another inclination, another sin. So in other words, doing the sin, getting the effect, waiting for the effect, getting the effect, you actually get another seed and inclination to do more sin. It's not that the doing the sin and getting the result extinguishes the desire to do more sin. So those effects described as almost mature refer to the stress from which suffering is present. So it's another, the Prabhupada defines it a little bit differently now. I guess almost mature. It's almost mature. That means still suffering, and I guess mature would be also suffering, anyway. The effects described as almost mature refer to the distress from which one is suffering at present. And the effects lying as seed are in the core of the heart, and there's a certain stock of sinful desires which lack seeds. The Sanskrit word kuta means that they are almost ready to produce the seed. That means the inclination. Okay. So here Prabhupada's defined it a little bit different. Are almost ready to produce the seed or the effect of seed. An immature effect refers to the case where the seedling has not begun. So this is sort of the in-between stage between kuta and bija, I guess. Because the effect, there's two types of effect of sinful action. One effect is the reaction you get, you know, the karma you get, karmic reaction. And the other effect is the kuta and bija you get from doing that sinful reaction. You get another inclination to continue more sin. It's the same thing. From this statement of Padma Purana, it's understood that material contamination is very subtle. Its beginning, its fruition, and results in how one suffers, such results in the form of distress are part of a great chain. When one catches some disease, it is often very difficult to ascertain the cause of the disease, where it originated, and how it is maturing. The suffering of a disease, however, does not appear all of a sudden. It actually takes time. As in the medical field, for precaution's sake, the doctor injects a vaccination to prevent the growing of contamination, the practical injection to stop all the fructifications of the seeds of our sinful activities is simply engagement in Krishna consciousness. And as we often spoke, that Krishna consciousness fries the seeds, because the seeds remain there unless you do something about them. Because seeds can remain almost forever. It's like there's seeds that were discovered in the pyramids that were put there thousands of years ago. And they poured some water on them and the seeds fructified. Or they sprouted. Use a more precise word. They sprouted. Okay. So it's the same thing with these seeds in our heart. Right now, the seeds of sin may not be sprouting. Of course, if we're devotees, there shouldn't be any seeds there, but they may not be sprouting. But in the right situation, boom, they will sprout. So therefore, one should fry the seeds. Like if one fries seeds, seeds are killed and they can't sprout. And you fry the seeds by the process of devotion and service. In this connection, Shukadeva Goswami speaks in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, second chapter, verse 17, about the story of Vijamil, who began life as a fine and dutiful Brahmin, but in his young manhood became wholly corrupted by a prostitute. Now, let me explain something. It wasn't the prostitute's fault. Vijamil was meditating on her. He started to see her with someone else, and he just meditated, contemplate. When contemplation of sense objects, one gets attached to those sense objects. From the attachment to the sense objects, you get lusty. When they were lusty, there's anger. And then he had a really wicked life, mistreated his parents, mistreated his good wife, and at the end of his wicked life, just by calling the name Narayan Krishna, he was saved despite so much sin. So you may say, hey, why can't I do that? You know, let's let all hell break loose right now. Well, if you try to do that and think you're going to chant Narayan or Krishna at the time of death, it ain't going to happen like that. His sin or his fall down was accidental. And he wasn't chanting to save himself at the time of death. He was chanting because he gave his kid the name Narayan, so it was called Namavash. So accidentally, meaning something else, he was chanting. Shukadeva points out that austerity, charity, and the performance of ritualistic ceremonies for counteracting sinful activities are recommended processes, but that by performing them, one cannot remove the sinful desires seen from the heart, as was the case with the Jamil in his youth. Let me tell the story from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. So in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the story of Vijamil comes, we start with Parikshit Maharaj, who was actually taking instruction from Shukadeva Goswami. Parikshit Maharaj has been condemned to die in 7 days by the bite of a snake bird. And so he wants to hear Bhagavatam. Definitely he's very attentive. And so Parikshit Maharaj has just heard in the previous canto about all the hells the soul may be subjected to for performing sinful activities. And Parikshit Maharaj is thinking very compassionately, how can the souls be relieved from this? And Shukadeva Goswami, his guru, gives him a very tricky answer because he wants the disciple to correct him. He says, actually, if one performs atonement, and Shukadeva Goswami says that, and Parikshit Maharaj says, Guru Maharaj, I don't really accept that explanation, he says it respectfully, because by doing atonement, the seed of desire remains in the heart. And he compared this type of atonement without devotional service, without chanting the Lord's holy names, to be like an elephant bathing. And when we see an elephant bathing, what does an elephant do? Well, it bathes. No, it goes in the water, comes out of the water, and it throws dirt on itself. I know it has a reason for doing that. The dirt is abrasive, helps him clean himself. But the whole reason for using that particular analogy is to say that one may perform austerities, or what we call prayaschitta, atonement. Prayaschitta means atonement. But the desire to do that thing will be there, and he'll do it again. So it's like, I'll give you an example. Just like recently in one particular religion, which I won't mention, about 2 days ago, there was a day of atonement for one's sins, in which one fasts for one day or a half day or something like that. And I was getting letters from people who were members of that particular religion asking me for forgiveness. I said, sure, I forgive you, but don't do it again. So the only way to fry that seed, which was also brought out in that discussion between Pariksit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami, was the chanting of the Lord's holy name, is the chanting of the Lord's holy names. And Sukadeva Goswami speaks in a very poetic way, very beautiful way. Let me just check one thing and make sure we got the right microphone. Yeah, we have the right microphone. Sukadeva Goswami speaks in a very poetic way, a very beautiful way, to his disciple Maharaj Pariksit. He has his verse, Tasmat Sankirtanam Vishnor Jagannamangalam Mahatam Api Karavya Vidyakantaka Nishkritam. That the only way to overcome the effects of sinful activities, not to get the reaction, is to chant the holy name. Sankirtan. Okay, let me continue. Shukadev points out that austerity, charity, and performance of rituals are counteract our recommended process, but by performing them, one cannot remove the sinful desire seed from the heart, as in the case of the Jamil in his youth. This sinful desire seed can be removed only by achieving Krishna consciousness. And this can be accomplished very easily by chanting what? The Maha Mantra, or Hare Krishna Mantra, as recommended by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In other words, unless one adopts the path of devotional service, he cannot be 100% clean from all the reactions of sinful activities. Because some of the actions or reactions of sinful activities are the inclination and the seed to do that same thing again or another sinful thing again. So you want to become freed from that cycle. By performing Vedic ritualistic activities, by giving money and charity, and by undergoing austerity, one can temporarily become free from the reaction of sinful activities, but the next moment, he must again become engaged in sinful activities. Exactly what I said, the kuta and the bija do not become eradicated. For example, a person suffering from venereal disease on account of excessive indulgence in sex life, illicit sex life, has to undergo some severe pain and medical treatment, but he is then cured for the time being. But because he has not been able to remove the sex desire from his heart, he must again indulge in the same thing and become a victim of the same disease. So medical treatment may give temporary relief from the distress of such venereal disease, but unless one is trained to understand that sex life is abominable, it is impossible to be saved from such repeated distress. Similarly, the ritualistic performances, charity and austerity, which are recommended in the Vedas, may temporarily stop one from acting in sinful ways, but as long as the heart is not clear, one will have to repeat sinful activities again and again. And also, it occurs, let's say, if one is overeating and suffers indigestion, oh, my stomach, I ate too much, then, you know, they become very repentant. I ate too much. I won't eat so much again. Next time there's prasadam or food or whatever, then they eat too much. Another example given in the Srimad Bhagavatam concerns the elephant who enters into a lake and takes a bath very seriously, exactly what I just talked about, cleansing his body thoroughly. Then as soon as he comes onto the shore, he again takes some dust from the earth and throws it over his body. That's the story of Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit, which I just told. Similarly, a person who is not trained in Krishna consciousness cannot become completely free from the desire for sinful activities. Neither the yoga process nor philosophical speculations, nor fruit of activities can save one from the seeds of sinful desires. Only by being engaged in the devotional service can this be done. There's another evidence in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam's 22nd chapter, verse 39, wherein Sanat Kumar says, "My dear king, the false ego of a human being is so strong that it keeps him in material existence as if tied up by a strong rope. Only the devotees can cut off the knot of this rope, strong rope, very easily by engaging themselves in Krishna consciousness. Others who are not in Krishna consciousness but are trying to become great mystics or great ritual performers cannot advance like the devotees. Therefore, it is the duty of everyone to engage himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness in order to be freed from the tight rope of false ego and entanglement in material activities. So, let's see if we have time to read a little. Yeah, let's finish up this section. This tight knot of false ego is due to ignorance. As long as one is ignorant about his identity, we are a soul, he is sure to act wrongly and thereby be, and part and parcel of Krishna, and eternal servant of Krishna, and thereby become entangled in material contamination. This ignorance of factual knowledge can be dissipated by Krishna consciousness, as is confirmed in the Padma Purana as follows. Pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the highest enlightenment. And when such enlightenment is there, it is just like a blazing forest fire, killing all the inauspicious snakes of desire. The example is being given in this connection that when there is a forest fire, the extensive blazing automatically kills all the snakes in the forest. There are many, many snakes on the ground in the forest, and when a fire takes place, it burns the dried foliage, and the snakes are immediately attacked. Animals who have four legs can flee from the fire or can at least try to flee, but the snakes are immediately killed. Similarly, the blazing fire of Krishna consciousness is so strong that the snakes of ignorance are immediately killed. You know better. You know what is the right thing. So do it, and you are responsible for your actions. Okay? On that happy note, let us go and get some questions from you all. Hold on a second. We will open up the floor for questions in a second. All right. Wait, not quite. Okay, you are allowed to unmute yourselves. Who wants to speak first? No one. Going once. Oh, someone sent a text message. They're too shy to ask the question themselves. So. Oh. I know it's Ishwara Chaitanya. We all want to worship. We want to wish Ishwara Chaitanya, who's with us, happy birthday. He's 14 years old and renounced from this world. He's a child prodigy. So happy birthday. Okay, so who wants to ask a question? Oh my God. Oh, Nalini Kant. Okay, speak louder so we can hear you.
Hare Krishna Gurudev, can you hear me now?
I can hear you better now. The better to hear you with.
Oh, thank you. Gurudev, despite of getting this jewel of Krishna consciousness and Srila Prabhupada's mercy, your mercy, still understanding your instructions, but we are unable to perform sadhana correctly or perfectly, have these inclinations. So where do I fall in there, or we fall? Like, is it bija, kuta, or prarabdha, or prarabdha?
Oh my God. Now, you are on the clearing stage. For example, there's different stages of chanting, performing bhakti. The first one is the offensive stage. And then there's the clearing stage. So you're trying to get rid of these inclinations. There's different impressions that you have. You know, they're not exactly kutas or bijas or parabdha or aparabdha or anything like that. They're impressions, or we might say habits from the past. Just like we all have different habits of doing things. We have a habit of going to sleep at a certain time. We have a habit of, you know, touching our ear at a particular point. You know, everybody has these different habits. So you have a habit of doing things that are not Krishna conscious. So take responsibility and STOP. Stop them. And ignore, you know, there's some conditioning. You are a conditioned soul. We mentioned that in the beginning. That's why you can't see Radha and Krishna on the river behind me. You're not a conditioned soul. You would see Radha and Krishna behind me. Yamuna Tiro Vanachari. So, anyway. Actually, tomorrow I should make a little Photoshop and put Radha and Krishna behind me on the river. But anyway, so because you are this in soul, you still have these habits. These are upadis, designations. These are anarthas, unwanted things. But don't blame the kuta, bija, parabdha, aparabdha for them. Because all this karma becomes eradicated by chanting Hare Krishna. You have to take personal responsibility at this point.
Okay.
And the first thing you do about all these things is you ignore them. You go on in spite of all these impulses. You know, we may have so many impulses to do or not do things, but we ignore them being on the intelligence platform, doing the right thing, which we talked about quite often in our Gita class. Do the right thing in spite of the Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udara Pashta Vegam. You know that nectar instruction?
Yes, Guruji.
We have pushings. There's pushings even from this body that we have. Even though it's not karma, kuta, bija, parabdha, parabdha, and all those other nice things. It's the pushings. Vacho Vegam. You know, pushings of the speech, manasa, of the mind, krodha, anger, vegam, vegam means pushes, jiva, tongue, speak, jiva vegam, udara pashta, the belly, you know, eating, and genitals, udara pashta vegam. So, therefore, we have to just tolerate these urges. That's what Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Instruction. He says, Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udara Pashta Vegam. And if you can tolerate them, actually you become a qualified devotee and even qualified to instruct others in Krishna consciousness. So these pushings will be there. Don't expect that when you come to Krishna consciousness, it's like you've taken Novocaine or whatever it is for all these narthas. These narthas, the pushings will be there until you become detached from the body, until you come to the stage of what? At least anartha nivritti. Of course, anartha nivritti is interesting. Anartha nivritti means freedom from unwanted things. But even the anartha nivritti process goes on throughout the whole process of devotional service until one comes to bhava, in which case at bhava you are free from the anarthas, but you're not absolutely free. And at prema, you're absolutely free. In other words, they can't come back. So tolerate. Tamsa tikshasya bharata. Matrasparshas dukontiyas. You know, that's the one thing that people just don't want to tolerate. And it's very interesting when one first joins Krishna consciousness, one becomes a brahmachari, one's trained in toleration. It's actually like joining the Marines. It used to be. Joining Krishna consciousness in the old days was like joining the Marines. Nowadays, it's like joining a Hawaiian vacation. Anyway, but in the old days, if you became a brahmachari, you had to go to Mangal Arati every morning. You had to get up early. You had to, when I was a brahmachari, you couldn't even leave the temple to go to the bathroom if you wanted to go to the bathroom. It's not that you had to wear diapers. But anyway, you had to, that would have been bad. Now, I had an interesting trainer. He's my good friend now, but he was tough. So you had to raise your hand to go to the bathroom, and even if you wanted to go to the bathroom, another brahmachari would follow you to make sure you came back, because people did have a habit of taking a snooze when they were supposed to be going to the bathroom. So, and that training, the benefit of that training, it makes the mind very strong. Very few people had that sort of training. And then I remember one time I was in the New York temple, and it was the middle of the winter, the water was freezing, you still had to take a shower. For those of you who know centigrade, it was 0 degrees. And for Fahrenheit, it was 32 degrees, and it was like having knives stuck into your back to take a shower when it was so cold. Literally, it was like knives stuck in your back. Now, of course, I've gotten soft in my old age. In order to go swimming, even when it's 60 degrees, I had to get an X-Man wetsuit to go swimming. And, you know, I've gotten really soft. I've forgotten my brahmachari years. So anyway, in the old days, I would have gone in with the ice swimming. Yeah. So the point is that one gets trained up. One thing is, when we started our temple here in New Goloka, it was very interesting. We had very little amenities. We were actually camping out the first year or two. And the devotees said to me, the other devotees said to me, with the exception of one devotee, said that we're leaving, we can't take these austerities anymore. And I said, even if you leave, I'll stay. And that's because, wonder if it's worth making this type of training is not good for children. It's not good for children, okay. It's good for adults when you're over 18, okay? Not for when you're 5 years old. I'm not suggesting that. Yes, you're right. It's abusive to children. I was abused. Anyway, so the point is, because I had that sort of training, I was able to tolerate, and the first 2 winters here, we had to, basically, everything was outside, and it's cold here, you have snow, ice, and everything like that. So I was able, and our Sunday feast was a campfire, and we had a lot of fun. I was in ecstasy. And it's also why right now I can tolerate, let's say, the different types of issues or problems or challenges that are coming, like from devotees. I can tolerate that because of that training I had, you know, basic training. So anyway, so the point is, and you know, there's some pushing. For example, if my tongue pushes to eat, just like today, we were at someone's birthday party, and they were handing out all these wonderful cookies with chocolate chips and cheese in them, or whatever it is. They're handing out all these cookies. So my tongue might say, cookies, cookies. You know, everybody likes cookies. I like cookies, too. I do. I mean, what can I say? I like cookies. I would love to eat a cookie. But my intelligence, because I made my intelligence very strong, the intelligence says no. And I don't eat the cookie. So that's the point. You know, there's this pushing. Even if you're an advanced devotee, I'm not saying I'm an advanced devotee, but even if you're an advanced devotee, and your tongue is telling you to eat a cookie, you have the strength to say no. Because the body will be pushing in different ways. It's a fact. When you have a material body, it pushes you to do things. It's a fact. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udra pasha vegam. It pushes you to eat. It pushes you to, you know, sex life or intoxication. It pushes you to get angry. You know, sometimes some devotee does some really stupid thing, and there's an inclination, you know. It's like I was with another devotee one time, and don't worry, it's not someone on this call. He was driving the car, and someone cut us off, and he said, "Marge, give me the permission to get out of the car and beat this person up." And I said, no, it's not a good idea. And this guy was big. You know, the person who was driving the car was actually quite big. And he was quite capable of beating someone up. So Anyway,
Sorry, I don't understand.
Uh-oh. That's my Google Home. That's my virtual assistant who is not cooperating with me right now. So anyway, so anyway, kind of funny when she interrupts. Please don't interrupt anymore. So anyway, so one should be very strong to be able to say no to the pushing of the tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words. And don't worry, it's not karma, vikarma, kuta, bija, prarabdha, aparabdha, almost a seed, almost maybe a seed, completely mature, almost mature. It's just you and your body.
Yes.
You understand? That's it. It's you struggling against impulses from that body that you got.
Yes.
And just say no. Just like when it's time to wake up in the morning. I mean, how many people feel like waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning? I mean, the body would certainly, especially when it's cold out, the body would like to be comfortable. Of course, the body doesn't like anything. But you would like to be comfortable underneath your covers, snug as a bear. And you know, especially, you know, now you're coming out of the cold season there in New Zealand. And you just have to say, no, I'm getting out. I'm going to serve Krishna. So this is the point.
Yeah.
Not kuta bija, parabda, whatever. It's just say no.
Yeah.
I think it was Nancy Reagan. Was it Nancy Reagan who said, just say no? Yeah. Okay, she was talking about people taking drugs. She said, just say no. So you have to make the intelligence very strong. Intelligence is made strong by knowing what the purpose is. And it's good to have some training when one's a young man, not a child. Thank you for giving me that information. The children should be treated with love. And when you join the Brahmachari Ashram, tough love. So, anyway, it shouldn't be as tough as I went through, because that was like Marines basic training. You know, that was a little too much for me. I tolerated, and I'm still here today, but some people are not here today because of that training. But anyway, that's the Marines. Oh, that's the Hare Krishna movement. Anyway. So we have Krishna Priya wants to ask a question. She has her hand up.
Gurudev, can I just little add to this and this little query? Gurudev, like as I have come in Krishna consciousness so late, so I have missed out on this Brahmachari training. Or so how do I achieve that? Or instruction for me is to tolerate this and keep working.
How do you achieve it? Just listen to your wife. No, seriously. Seriously, I mean, just, well, right now, yes, it's probably harder when you're older. Prabhupada said it's harder to teach an old Prabhu new tricks. Probably use a different word, but I don't want to insult anybody. But, yeah, it's harder when one is older. Actually, I'll answer the other question on the text message in a second. So it's harder, but just really you have to develop the strength of knowing what is the right thing to do and doing it in all circumstances. Okay. You know, be attached to Dharma. Think of it like Dharma. What is my duty? At least think of it like that.
Yeah.
But do it joyfully, understanding that that pleases Krishna. Yeah. I mean, it's good to have training. When one's young. I mean, I really think, therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says, Komarat acharet pragyo, Varmam Bhagavatam Niha Durlabam Manasa Janma Tada Dhruvam Arthadam. He said that to his classmates who were objecting that he was giving them training when they were actually his classmates, when they were very young. So he said the best time is Kaumara, from the beginning of life. But if you can't, then yes, it is more of a struggle when you're older. It is definitely more of a struggle when you're older to have that sort of determination, but you can do it.
Yes.
Just think of the words, do the right thing, do the right thing, do the right thing. If you think about that, that really helps you control the mind.
Yes.
Because I remember that expression from some radio host lady who was a psychologist. She kept saying, do the right thing, do the right thing. And, I keep repeating that to myself. Do the right thing, do the right thing, do the right thing. Then it helps me do the right thing. Because the right thing is what pleases Krishna. Okay?
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
And I think Krishna Priya has a question. I see her hand up.
Jagirde, please accept my obeisances.
And my blessings. So what's up?
Well, I just had a question, and it was in relationship to the previous topic when we were speaking about Ajamil. And we know the story how he got involved with the prostitute and bad association. And then one time I was curious, because there's always like a story behind this story. So then I looked up and it said that in a previous life that Ajamil had been a mendicant. And I don't know where this was from, but it was on the devotee site. He had been a mendicant, and then he had drank cold water, and he had lost consciousness, and then an Ayurvedic physician came, and he said the only way he would get his life back is if there was a warm body of a girl, and it was this young, pure girl with this Brahmin. This is the story. So then when he woke up, he cursed the girl, and the girl was just a pure girl. It wasn't anything sensual. And so he cursed the girl. And then because she was a pure chaste girl, because he cursed her, then she said, then in your next life, you'll take birth in a Brahmana family, but you will be so fallen, because he cursed her to be a prostitute, you'll be so fallen, you'll keep me. So the validity of the story is not so much what my question is, but what my question is that do all of us at times carry things from previous lives that...
Yeah.
At particular times in our life, there's just something that's going to like come out of like nowhere and shock us and shock others. And is the only solution, like is there a solution to just always be praying or always be absorbed in chanting or to be humble?
Yes, to chant the holy names, the curses don't work. If this Ajamil kept chanting, that curse wouldn't have worked. All I know is that curses become nullified if one takes shelter of the Vaishnavas. I mean, even Lord Chaitanya one time cursed this person who had committed an offense. Whew. There was this Gopal Chapala who had committed an offense against Srivas Thakur. You know the story? He committed an offense against Srivas Thakur by making it seem that Srivas Thakur was worshipping Durga rather than worshipping the holy names. Anyway, he put the ingredients for worship of Durga outside of Srivas Thakur's house, and Srivas Thakur saw it, he brushed it away. Nobody took it seriously. But this Gopal Chapala developed leprosy as a result.
Yeah.
Then he went to Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya said, he asked Lord Chaitanya to forgive him or to, relieve him of the distress. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, I curse you to be bitten by those same worms for millions of births. Wow. And even though Lord Chaitanya was so merciful, he had committed offense against a devotee. But then later on, when this Gopal Chapala apologized to Srivas Thakur, Lord Chaitanya forgave him and the curse didn't apply anymore. So even there, he was cursed by Lord Chaitanya. And it didn't actually work when he actually took shelter, proper shelter.
That
so the
was
point
my
is, yeah, that's really the point. If one takes up Krishna consciousness, I'm not going to worry about curses.
Like I was thinking, Gurudev, in relationship to like offenses. Like there's that one story, was it when Rupa Goswami was in trance and then a sage went by and he was laughing, but it was like a pastime, but he was laughing at him. So, you know, in that particular story, they had a festival and they saw who didn't come. But in our own life, especially in the execution to devotional service, and if we've ever had a position of management, that we don't realize at times we've hurt people, or we've offended people, you know, one who's been a teacher or a manager or in any role, we hurt and offend people unknowingly. So then, you know, how do we rectify for those offenses if we don't know who we offended? But
Krishna will inform us. Krishna's not going to punish us without informing us who we offended or giving us a method. Krishna will help us. It's not that Krishna's just going to punish us, you know, we have no way to rectify ourselves. It's not like that. You know, there's always a way to rectify ourselves. We can pray to Krishna for offense and having offended anyone. I mean, just like at the end of a fire sacrifice, you have this whole ceremony to beg forgiveness for any offenses or mistakes that may have been committed. So, you know, Krishna understands. I mean, first of all, this thing with Gopal Chakravarti, the guy who offended Srivas Thakur, Gopal Chapala, he understood what he had done. And he was informed by Lord Chaitanya. It wasn't that he just like wasn't aware. So Krishna will give us a chance. I mean, I wouldn't worry. Otherwise, I would never take any position. I would go to the Himalayas and just sit down and meditate and do Kundalini yoga. Oh, I'd never do Kundalini yoga. That's for rascals. Anyway, so otherwise I would sit in the Himalayas and just forget about the bi-cruel world. You know, so I have to do my service. And Krishna will help me. Krishna says, Ananyas chintayanto mam yajanak paryupasate tesham nityavyukta mam yogakshema vahamyaham. For those who are devoted to me, I preserve what they have and they carry what they lack. And that's my faith. That's my faith. So as far as that story of Ajamil, you know, there's many stories people tell from this prana, that prana, and I don't know which ones are bona fide and which ones are not. I just know what Prabhupada has given us.
I just know what I've read. But that just, when I saw that, it just brought up that whole question about, you know, when we're speaking about, you know, resultants from previous lives, and it can just be like, you know, we're so overwhelming.
Shoo. Well, now I know why some of my disciples are causing me pain. I should bow down at all their feet and beg forgiveness. Anyway, I wouldn't worry about it. Krishna will show us. We're in the right path. We're protected by Prabhupada. If we're sincere, Krishna will show us who we need to apologize to.
Radhika Lokananda are very kind.
Yeah. Plus, anyway, it's two days too late because Yom Kippur was 2 days ago.
So. I know. I did pray and do my atonement.
Too late. You got to wait till next Yom Kippur to beg for forgiveness.
No, I did. I already did.
All right, good. You're a real Mancini. So anyway, so on that happy note, it's actually quite late. We'll see everybody tomorrow evening. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.